This is A Little Too Quiet. Thanks for listening. It is the Ferndale Library Podcast. And if you've been listening to this whole season, you've heard us mention the Friends of the Ferndale Library on literally every episode today. We're going to talk to the treasurer from that nonprofit organization, Lorinda Ross, and we're going to be talking about exactly what it is a Friends of the Library group does. But we're also going to be talking about how she moved here from California to Michigan and really found a sense of community when she started getting into what really became a library family. And we're going to be talking about how active and awesome this group is. Joining us now on A Little Too Quiet is Lorinda Ross, and she is from the Friends of the Ferndale Library.
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm well.
The Friends of the Ferndale Library are mentioned on this podcast every episode.
Nice.
And they made this podcast a reality.
Yeah, we are a fun group of people.
You are. You know?
Yeah, we are a pretty young friends group.
Okay.
Most friends groups tend to be retired folks and... Mm-hmm. So we're young, and I think that matches our community well,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it matches what the library's mission is mm-hmm. and helps us engage better, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. This isn't necessarily elderly folks in the community who are sort of putting in volunteer time.
Yes.
You guys are still in your 30s, 40s, 50s. You have all this energy you're bringing to it, and you probably see it as much more than just volunteer work. It's much more than that.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, one of the things that we have to do pretty regularly is kind of rein ourselves in a little bit and remind ourselves that we are a town of 25,000 people mm-hmm. and this is a small library.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of big ideas. And
you're sitting around your meetings with the friends and you're saying, why can't the library have this cool thing?
Right.
Like a podcast.
Right. Right.
Right. But at least you did that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah. So it's a great group of people. I really enjoy it. And it really helped me get to know the community better.
Oh, that's great.
You know, I'm a little bit of an outsider. I moved here almost 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't really know anybody in the state other than my family that had relocated here.
And where'd you come from?
Raised all over the state of California.
Okay.
And settled in the Bay Area and lived in between Oakland, San Francisco, and Berkeley for my whole adult life.
So, okay, so like paradise weather, and now you're in Michigan.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But not paradise, cost of living.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there were a lot of lifestyle things that I, as a single parent, it made a lot of sense to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been nice. I mean, I work from home, so I still work for an employer in California.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me to work 25 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to before I was working close to 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been able to stay home with my daughter.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, so it's been pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
But really, when I moved here, I didn't know anybody.
And it sounds so daunting.
It's a little overwhelming. And I was in my mid-40s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little weird to try and the biggest thing still that happens to me is the fact that people will say, like, oh, we're going to go up to Kalamazoo. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything to me. I have no idea where that is.
Right.
I have no where living in California my whole life. I knew every back alley, mm-hmm. And I'd lived in so many towns in California,
mm-hmm.
you know, and especially the Bay Area. Like, I knew everything, you know, and here to just be like, I know nothing.
Yeah.
And still, you know, I just don't have that. I don't have that longevity, right?
Yeah. But you even know? If you didn't get bearings, you still started meeting people.
Yes,
like
I did. So I, there was somebody that was on the school board that I met through volunteering in my daughter's classroom. And I told her that I didn't know anybody and I needed friends. And would you be my friend, please?
Oh, man, that is so hard to say later in life.
Yes,
it is. Easier to say as a fourth or fifth grader, maybe.
Right. So she's super involved in the community and she introduced me to a few people. And I eventually ended up becoming friends with somebody that was on the library board.
Oh, okay.
And they invited me to be on the friends board.
Yeah.
They said, would you be interested in being our treasurer? And
yeah.
I said, yes, that's my, you know, I've been working in finance for multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
So more than I'd like to say.
Well, you say you eventually came into our little library family here, mm-hmm. and you said you've only been here about 10 years. I feel like I met you almost 10 years ago. You must have gotten into the library very early after you got here.
I did. So I don't ever remember not having a local library. So I've lived a lot of places. That was something that was important in our family. My mom is a huge reader. And so we were always engaged in the library. And even as an adult, I knew where my neighborhood library was. Yeah. I knew where my local library was. And then as a parent, it became something that we just did on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And around the same time, I think right around the same time that I started volunteering with the Friends, I also started homeschooling my daughter.
Okay.
And so what we would do is we would come to the library every single day.
Right. I remember seeing you.
So we came every day, and I kind of allowed her to guide our curriculum.
Oh, wow.
So whatever her interests would be, like we went through a big volcano phase, and we would read about volcanoes. We would do volcano experiments. We would watch videos about volcanoes. Mm-hmm. We would write music about volcanoes. Like, we just tried to engage whatever... that was her interest at that time.
Sure, right? But you were just taking her to an ecosystem of knowledge that she could just every week harvest new kinds of, intellectual nourishment from. You just go to a different shelves are like trees, and she's just picking berries at that point.
Exactly.
That's great.
Exactly. And she just, one of the things that was nice is she comes here and she just feels safe.
Yeah, that too.
And she also feels famous,
mm-hmm.
because the people who, well, it used to be that everybody that worked here knew her name. Now there's more new staff that don't know her as well. But, when she was younger, she would come in and everyone would say, "Hey, Alex."
Oh, yeah.
And
I think libraries always love to do that when they can.
Yes, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And so that was something that really boosted her confidence, and made her feel pretty special. So I love our library for that. That's really what got me engaged, because it's easy when you're volunteering. I can just run in the back door, sit down for a board meeting, and run out.
Right. It's one of the tenets of what we do here. Doing cool programs is great. Having mm-hmm. great books is great, but making sure we're a welcoming environment is key.
It is. It really is. And I can't tell you, as she started to explore her independence, it was really nice that I could sit by the fireplace and read a book or even knit. Mm-hmm. And she would just be running wild around the library.
Yeah.
Tell
us a bit about any libraries out in glamorous California, though.
Well,
sunny California.
When I moved here, I had been living in Berkeley.
Okay.
And I have spent most of, I would say, the past 20 years of my career, maybe more than that, working primarily for architects and design professionals. So one of my clients is the architect that designed the Berkeley Public Library.
Whoa.
And it's a beautiful space. Mm-hmm. It's like 7 floors, and it doesn't look like a new building. It fits with the architecture of downtown Berkeley.
Oh man, that's
And it's right
awesome.
Downtown, and it's really a beautiful space.
That's awesome. Sometimes I worry architects aren't doing that enough.
I know.
To make it fit into the community.
Yeah, I think there's certain communities that people might complain it makes it a little challenging to bring in new stuff, but some communities are really on top of that. And Berkeley is definitely, Berkeley is everything that people think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. real quick note is, we've talked on this podcast about our library being renovated, but when you come down our corridor of vestibule, you see the original front face of the library. Yes. You can touch it. I love that part. So
that's my favorite part.
Yeah.
I really like that. And I moved here right at the time that the library was opening. Right. So I don't ever remember this, I don't remember a library prior to this library. But I do remember moving here, and especially someone who's worked with design professionals for so long, being really wowed, especially by the green roof. Yeah. I was like, this is impressive. This mm-hmm. is a progressive community.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell just by the design. you know, that this was something, this was a community that was looking forward, not backwards.
Yeah. Well, I sidetracked us from Berkeley. Get us back to Berkeley's library.
Okay. So Berkeley Library. I mean, it's a big, you know, it has a big bookstore inside of it that you can buy used books at. But yeah, it's large. And I believe it's on the fifth floor is where the children's floor is.
Okay.
So there's an entire floor, you know, with old wooden toys and cool things that you can ride on. There's like a seesaw and, you know, some cool stuff like that. And a lot of programs. Mm-hmm. But I really, I mean, I don't know. You guys rival some pretty, you guys rival big libraries as far as the programs.
Oh, go on.
But it's true. You know, I mean, there really is a lot that's offered here for the size of this community is kind of remarkable.
Well, I mean, we won't be humble about saying we don't try real hard. We do. We try real hard in that department.
I know.
But all right. More library experiences from you when you were in your youth.
Okay.
Books you loved, things you just were turned on to.
Yeah, well, I also remember living in the middle of the Mission in San Francisco, which is kind of like, you know, hipster central, right?
I think that's a global hipster center.
It was at the time, I lived there all of the 90s.
Okay, wow.
And so I used to walk past the 24th Street library every day on the way home from the train. You know, so I would get off BART, which is the Bay Area train system, and walk to my apartment, and I would walk by the library. So it was often a stop. You know, it was always kind of my first thing to stop in and see what was new, what's out on the shelves. Mm-hmm. I love, even now, I mean, it's not very often that I come in the library looking for something very specific.
Yeah.
I come in, and even if I only have 3 or 4 minutes, I'm at the new release station, you know, and I'm perusing. I especially like nonfiction, just because I'm kind of geeky that way.
Yeah.
And it also, I find that with nonfiction and my life being as busy as it is, I don't have the time that I did when I was younger where I could just fall into a book for 3 days.
Right.
And
we miss those days.
Right. You know, so I'm just, I have a lot more on my plate. So nonfiction allows me that space too, I find.
Yeah.
You know, that I can kind of pick up and gain some knowledge out of a small thing. But I still, and I listen to a lot of audiobooks, but I still really like touching the paper.
Same.
You know,
same.
I really like that.
Yeah.
And I guess as a kid, you know, I was fairly obsessed. Well, we had a collection of books on presidents. And I was very interested in that at a very young age. Mm-hmm. They were for young readers, you know, books for young readers on all, and every book, there was a book on every president, plus Benjamin Franklin was in there. So I remember reading all of those and being really, that kind of sparked an interest for history in me that still remains.
That's a good sort of a gateway to being becoming a history buff, I think, because you want to learn about these personalities who were in the office.
Yes.
But lots of them are in office for extended periods of time, and so much history happens while they're there at the helm.
Right.
So there's all that context.
Yeah. So yeah, that was, and I also really liked the Nancy Drew books.
Right, Anna, classic.
Yes, that I was kind of obsessed with those. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I'm remembering this correctly, but I think there was even a TV, the Nancy Drew TV show with maybe like one of the pop stars. It wasn't Sean Cassidy, but it was someone along those lines.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Parker Stevenson, I think is who it was on the Nancy Drew. I could totally be making this up, but I don't think I am.
Apparently there's a new one in 2019.
Oh.
Yeah, they're bringing it back.
Yeah, this would have been in the 70s.
You know, you just made me think of how when I was in college, I was the kid who was in the library as often as I could. I'll freely confess that on this podcast. You know, I'd have classes in the morning, in the middle of the day, and in the evening, and I wouldn't go back home to my dorm or my co-op. I would just loiter in the library.
Right.
And I can't tell you why. I just liked being there.
Yeah, I do. I, you know, and even when I came, so my parents relocated here, and my sister followed them. It's been about 25, 28 years ago, something like that. And the first time I came back to visit, my mom said, "We have to go to the Detroit Library. You won't even believe this place."
Oh, yeah.
And so we went there. You know, we went to the DIA and we went to the library.
Yeah. It's great.
You know, so it's been a part of something my whole life, yeah. You know, that even... Yes, that's it. Is that Parker? Is there a Oh, there is a Cassidy in there, right?
It's Sean Cassidy.
It's Sean Cassidy.
And Parker Stevens.
And Parker Stevens.
Just checking up on the Nancy Drew fans.
So it was Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew Mysteries. So
yes.
Wow.
See, I remembered that.
Sorry, the original golden age of television. let me ask this. Before we started recording, you said that you do love storytelling, that you do love being on a stage, and you said something about singing. Tell me more about your life. You were into music, weren't you?
Well, I have been into music forever.
Right.
My brother was in band, so my brother was part of the Gilman Street Project when that started in Berkeley.
Right.
You know, and was... You know, he had a band, and I remember Maximum Rock and Roll always being around the house and things like that. He's 4 years younger than me. But I was also really into music. Mm-hmm. I had, there's a little pack of us, my cousins and I, and me and my cousin Phyllis are the only two girls out of the pack for a long time. And my sister was born 10 years younger, but this pack that we were, there's like 8 or 9 of us within a 3-year period.
Oh.
I was at the younger end of that. So I had these cousins that were 3 to 4 years, 2 to 3 years older than me. And so I remember, you know, like the first time I heard Led Zeppelin or, you know, all of those classics all came from my cousins, you know, sitting in my cousin Phyllis's bedroom. I remember having a sleepover at her house. New Year's Eve, her parents had a big party, and I slept over there New Year's Eve 1969, and her and I sitting up all night and listening to the transistor radio while they played the top 100 songs of the 60s.
Wow.
Yes, and being like, just thinking I was so cool.
Wow.
You know, and I'm sure staying up all night, we probably stayed up till midnight, you know, but it felt like all night. I mean,
right.
I was young then,
right.
You know, I was less than 10 at that point.
Right.
You know, so yeah, so it was just always a part of everything. And then in high school, I went to high school about a half an hour outside of, it was kind of in the outer Bay Area. And so it was about a half hour drive to Berkeley. And my best friend and I discovered that we could drive to Berkeley, and there was a place that you could see 3 bands for $1.
Yes.
And they actually would serve us pitchers of beer, even Ooh. Though we were in high school. And it was a little...
Another
was,
time.
I know. It was a little Mediterranean cafe, and in the back they had a stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we discovered this because there was a guy that went to our high school that was in a band called Violation. They were a rock and roll band,
All
you
right.
know, kind of a hair band in the 70s, mm-hmm. right? We just became like huge groupies, really. And we would go see Violation every chance we got.
Yeah.
But then that turned into going to this place, the International Cafe, to see music every week. Like yeah. every week we had to go there and hanging out at People's Park, thinking we were really cool. And that just continued through my life, you know.
Sounds like you're really drawn to the energy of a live performance.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And then when I lived in the Mission, I lived there all of the 90s. And I remember seeing the Donnas, one of their very first shows.
Wow.
They were still in high school.
Yeah.
You know, I was obsessed with anybody that was on Lookout Records. Like that was my, I was just obsessed.
I've got a few favorites from there.
Yeah, I just loved all that power pop mm-hmm. and, you know, Pansy Division and all these. There was this one band, well, they were called Sweet Baby Jesus, but then they became just Sweet Baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really loved Sweet Baby
mm-hmm.
and you know, there was these bands that, and where I lived, I could walk out my front door and the place that I liked to go the most was only 63 steps from my front door.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was great.
Yeah.
My sister met her husband in that neighborhood at one of the, you know, one of the clubs there when her and I went to go see a band one night. You know, great. So there's a lot of history, and that just became really a thing for me. You know, it was just, everything was about seeing live music.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've calmed down a bit, and I, but my musical taste has always been all over the place. So now when I go see live music, I'm less interested in going to see some hardcore and being in a pit. I'm more interested in seeing some Americana or... You know, I've always really liked lyrics has been the most important part to me of music. So I say jokingly, but it's really serious. It's really is serious. I mean, I'm just, when it comes to music, I'm attracted to outlaws, thinkers, and punks.
Ah, so, now I think that there are in the world of great literature also outlaws, thinkers, and punks.
Yes,
and I think
absolutely.
I think anyone who has really good taste in music also had a real good, like, rooted great taste in literature and were fans of books and authors too.
Yeah.
And they are responding to the substance and the thought, even if it is punk.
Right. Absolutely. And I, when it comes to literature and things, I had a rough time in school. It wasn't really, I don't really like being told what to do. Mm-hmm. I still don't really like being told what to do. I figured out a way to utilize that to my advantage. Like, I'm a little bossy. Some companies really like that.
Well, all right.
So I've been successful in that area, but I didn't follow a traditional path, right? Yeah. So I didn't go away to college, and I didn't have all those, like, the studying the classic literature. So as an adult in my 20s and 30s, I went to community college, and I read classics just for fun, kind of, things that I thought I should have read.
That's the best way you could read those.
Right.
You appreciate them more if you're not in a class.
Yeah, and so I would read something that was that I really wanted to, but I also had kind of a list of books that I thought were missing from my, you know, from what I had read.
Yeah.
And I took a class on Shakespeare when I was, you know, like 32 or something at the community college, just because I had zero, I'd never been exposed to Shakespeare. And I thought, well, I think that's important. That's something that's, you know, I didn't like not understanding reference points.
Right.
That really bothered me.
Yeah, now you'll see allegories everywhere.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
It's one of those things that, you know, whether you like it or not, it has stood the test of time. And so to be like a citizen of the world, you've got to know a little bit about Shakespeare.
You have to.
Even if you hate it.
Yeah.
It's like knowing kind of how football works so that you can be at a party and know what the heck somebody's talking about.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You have to know iambic pentameter.
I kind of liked Shakespeare. It was a little gossipy, you know, it was kind of very Danielle Steele-ish.
It was way more fun when you got into it. Like Chaucer was like that for me too. I'm like, ugh, like you can barely understand this.
Right.
But then somebody brings it alive for you and you go, oh, this is just like dirty poetry. This is
Yeah, Chaucer I bought, and I, you know, made it like 10 pages and was like, what the? I can't. What is this?
I had a vaguely loony professor that would like basically perform it at the front. It has to be read out loud so you could like hear. Because the spelling was all over the place, you know, it's like a developing language. So watching this clown perform.
Nice.
And then you're like, oh, now I can like hear what they're saying. So maybe get an audiobook version of Chaucer.
Oh, there's an idea.
But yeah, I came to classics later too, after the fact. That's when I got into 19th century stuff, and I don't know why.
Right.
Take it at my own pace. So seeing all these local bands back in the day.
Yes.
It makes me think that really drives home for you, really appreciating the value of supporting and preserving local arts. And I think that's a thread to where you get so involved with libraries, because that's kind of what we do here too.
It really is. And it's I think that really, like, the smallness of the world, right? How small the world has gotten has moved us away from really what our center of our community can be for us.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I have a lot of thoughts politically about that and everything, but I really do think I grew up with my grandparents living very community based, in the same, they lived in the same house until they passed away, mm-hmm. that they had raised my mom in. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a fire chief in that town. My grandmother was worked for the school district. You know, they were Shriners, and they were very involved in the community.
Yeah.
And so, and I think that when I would see that, I saw that everyone in the community didn't think the same way,
right?
But they were all a part of this community, right?
Right.
So you just accepted people in the community as they were, even if they thought a little differently than you.
Yeah.
And you knew how to dialogue about that. And I really, that's one of the things I really appreciate about the community here. I feel really blessed that I kind of stumbled into it. It wasn't something that I never in my life did I ever imagine I'd be living in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, my family goes back to California to, they came out on covered wagons, you know,
wow.
So it's, both of my parents were born and raised in Orange County.
Wow.
My dad's family, my grandfather was raised on a ranch in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me that I would be in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really, I found my place here, and this is my daughter's home.
Yeah.
You know, she was 9 when we moved here. She's 19 now. She loves it here.
Mm-hmm.
She likes being able to say that she was born in California.
Right.
That gives her a little bit of coolness.
Right.
But she loves Michigan.
That's great.
You know, she feels this is where she feels at home.
Like, yeah.
She likes the seasons. She loves the snow.
Yeah.
Like, anytime it snows, I know she's going to be in a great mood.
5 months out of the year, Michigan.
Yeah, right?
Well, I like that idea of the world getting smaller. And if we are thinking in a virtual sense, if we're on our social media feeds, it's almost like the terrain is changing every day. The headlines and the pictures fly by so fast that, so a place like a library or a place like a local music venue or a place like, or an outlet like a local radio station keeps us grounded.
Yes.
Because this is a consistent place.
Yes.
Exciting things happen here.
Yes.
But it's a building. There are people here.
Yes.
You know, yeah. You know what I mean? It keeps us grounded.
It really does. And it's hard to remember that things haven't always been this way either.
Right, right.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I've been around for a minute. I'm coming to, it's crazy to me. I still feel kind of the same inside,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a little weird to be the age that I am. But, you know, things weren't always like this. It
right.
was always really, and I felt like I was always right kind of in the middle of all of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worked in the dot-com craze of the late 90s. And, you know, I was a corporate controller for a web design firm and really kind of rode that whole thing. I know people from that experience that are real thought leaders in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And but now it's really... You know, I don't know the newest and greatest and latest anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, it moves much more faster than did back then.
It's like crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So,
you know.
You can hold onto a book here, you know, and you
right.
can sit down by the fireplace
yeah.
here.
It just yeah.
gives
it
you a
really
moment.
It really is a great safe place.
Yeah.
And it's also a really nice place. You know, I work from home, so mm-hmm. it's really nice to be able to get out of the house.
Free Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's something that I've been talking to community leaders about,
mm-hmm.
You know, that they're, I'm not an anomaly. Mm. People now can live wherever they want.
Right. Right.
And so,
and often work from home.
And often work from home,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, you know, to be a community that's viable, you know, with a healthy tax base that can support
mm-hmm.
services like a functional, healthy library and all that, it's really nice to be able to attract people and tell them that this is a good place to live,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And being able to come and sit with my laptop at the library and get some work done,
yeah.
you know, or take a break here and not work,
right?
Right? Come and just read a book. Because when you work from home, sometimes the office is always calling. Like
right.
I'm always like, I start to do something and then I'm like, really, I should finish this one thing up.
Yep.
You know, so I thought of you. I was watching an old episode of The Simpsons. from the 90s. Uh-huh. And well, you know how, for the sake of humor, there are characters like Bart or Homer who are designedly close-minded and like to make fun of people that they think are nerdy. And Marge is inviting Homer to an event at the Springfield Library hosted by the Friends of the Library. And Homer just laughs. He's like, "Friends of the Library? Like, who would be friends with the library? That sounds..." And I was like, oh, that's so great, because no one really might understand what Friends of the Library are, but what do you see it as your role? And right. And make your case now that you are cooler than Homer thinks.
Well, right. Well, I will say that I think I'm the oldest person on the Friends of the Library, mm-hmm. and I am under 60. Mm-hmm. I am not retired. I still work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we're a young, vital group. But what we really do is we help support the library and the mission of the library and hopefully raise some money so that the library can do some of those fun things that don't fit into a traditional budget.
Yeah.
Like podcast equipment.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know, but it gave me an opportunity to get involved in this community. And I feel like one of the reasons libraries are really important to me is that I feel like libraries are equalizers.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the library is open to everybody. You don't need a certain income level to access the services that are here. You don't need income level to access the events that happen here. You can see great live music for free. Mm-hmm. You can check out great local music
that
for
too.
Free. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see all of the new releases movie-wise for free, mm-hmm. by checking them out at the library, you know. So the library offers a lot to people, and
yeah.
technology.
It offers,
like you said, the free Wi-Fi, but it also, we have there's the whole computer station.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really is an equalizer. It
yeah.
means that people have access to information.
Yeah.
And I think that's super important.
Surprising too, because something could always be going on here. Case in point, you had to walk through a literal magic show to get to this podcast today.
Yes, I did.
That was just, you know, going on for kids. But a sense of community, it makes me think of some of the really big events that the Friends have done that have been, and I mean this in the best way possible, like mob scenes. Like, you guys have had these cake-offs where we're cake competitions in the library. We've had the Day of Wine and Roses.
Oh my
we've
gosh,
had,
that was crazy.
We've had these really big events and great turnouts, very enthusiastic, encouraging turnouts. But any favorite memories?
The kitchen is one of my happy places.
We were talking about that.
Yes. Yeah. So I really love the cake-off, although I will say I was quite disappointed that I didn't win. Because I'm also really competitive.
There was like 40 competitors, though.
I know. So. And somebody said to me, well, in order to win in a cake competition, you really have to make a chocolate cake. Like, the chocolate cake always wins.
That's the secret.
And I didn't make a chocolate cake. I made a grapefruit cake,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was sophisticated and fancy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I love all the festivals, and mm-hmm. when we're out there pouring beer and, you know, engaging
That's
with the
right.
community and kind of partying with everybody and
mm-hmm.
having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I also, one of the things that I really love is, you know, we have this great little bookstore where you can buy used books, and the money goes towards supporting the Friends.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to run that little bookstore, mm-hmm. and it's all volunteer run. You know, it's curated voluntarily. It is staffed voluntarily. And so that's kind of a small thing that we do, but I love it, is the Friends board every year, we invite all the volunteers in for a brunch to appreciate them,
mm-hmm.
and we cook for them.
Oh, yeah?
So we bring, I always bring these chocolate chip citrus scones that I make,
mm-hmm.
and Jenny always brings a crepe station. Like, she makes a whole stack of crepes at like 7
Is
in the
like
morning.
Rolling in a tray.
I know. She brings
wow.
crepes and Nutella
wow.
and whipped cream and fresh sliced fruit. And, you know, somebody will bring a frittata. Somebody mm-hmm. else will bring a nice potato casserole thing.
These all sound amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we've got coffee from Big B's
right.
and you know, so it's nice. It's that's one of my favorite things. I mean, we do a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. You
know, there is a lot of cool stuff, but I really love being able to do that and just show our appreciation for the people that really, it's tireless. They just come in and they man the bookstore and they leave and, you know, it's a big job. It is a big job.
As thankful as you guys are to those volunteers who run the bookstore, we're thankful to you because you complimented our programming. But sometimes if we get a very bold idea, you guys are like the netting for our acrobats. Like, what, you know, what if we can't pull this off? Oh, but the friends could help us.
Yes.
And that'd be great, you know? So we appreciate that.
Yeah, no, and it's super fun. I mean, I really love the creative side of it too. Like, it's been fun to, you know, we always have the t-shirts and mm-hmm. things like that. And we've kind of taken it to the next level with t-shirt design mm-hmm. and trying to do some that are kind of a little snarky fun. Mm-hmm. And, which I think suits our community. You know, we're not a stuffy, you know, community. We are Ferndale.
Exactly.
Ferndale.
Exactly.
You know? And it's not just money too. Like, it's, you know, anytime we need some extra folks to help out with stuff.
That too.
Like, we are going to have Detroit Party Marching Band mm-hmm. in this building.
Yes.
After hours. And it was suggested that maybe we get a few extra people just because the whole library will be open.
That'll be a scenario in the library where 30 marching band folk are going to be storming the the shelves.
So. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. And Ed, who's our friends liaison, was like, I think we can get some friends to. So not only did y'all pay for that, but you're also going to come and help us make sure that, you know, people leave after just the show's over and
very
be there
assuring.
For support.
Just a very assuring group. Very assuring.
Yeah.
Yes. We just know you'll be there for us.
Yeah. I love it. I really, you know, it feels important.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, one of the things that I really learned here, because I had spent my whole adult life living in cities, mm-hmm. large communities, where I just always kind of felt like other people are doing the volunteering. Other people are showing up politically. Other people are showing, like, I don't really have to do much, right? And when I moved here, I learned a really valuable lesson that I wish I would have known in my younger years. And that was that if you really want to gain a lot out of your community, then in a lot of ways, it's like your local bank. Like, mm-hmm. you have to make deposits mm-hmm. in order for there to be money in your account.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, I really early on became lucky with a few people that I met in the community that have become very good friends. And they're well known in the community. They are people that really show up.
Yeah.
And I became lucky by getting to know them. And but when I was asked to show up,
mm-hmm.
I said yes.
Yeah.
And I continue to say yes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm helping right now with the Good Neighbor Awards for the...
Oh, great.
You know, which is kind of a fun thing that happens in Ferndale.
Yeah.
And...
it needs investment. It needs nurturing.
Yeah,
I don't know how or when that dawned on me, but whether it's a library or a local newspaper, they need investment because these aren't corporately funded entities. Their existence isn't guaranteed.
Exactly.
They need your support.
Right,
you know,
right. And I gain a lot out of this support. I mean, it is a very selfish act, you know. I love what the library provides.
Oh, well, yeah, if you support us, we'll give you stuff.
Yeah,
we'll make
I
stuff.
I mean, it's super cool to be able to come and see, like, the Detroit Marching Band march through the library.
You
like,
never know.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. going to raise money for that, you know. Yeah, and being a part of things and knowing people. And, you know, I have a wealth of friendships and relationships now because of the library. These people that I'm on the board with are my dear friends.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, you know, I love that Ed is our liaison. Like, he's one of my favorite people.
He's a character. He's been on the podcast.
Yeah, I loved his episode.
We had to celebrate him for his building this film collection. He's done a wonderful job.
Yeah.
Now, I have one more question for you.
Yes.
Could you tell me about this book you have next to you? Now, I think because we could just reflect on how this is so cool that libraries do this. You've got some book clubs where you are in a cookbook book club.
Yes.
I'd never heard of these before. So, how cool is that?
Yeah. So I'm super excited. I have been participating in two cookbook book clubs that are put on by other local libraries.
I love how these are things that give us things to eat, and pronouncing the book club is a mouthful.
Yes,
also.
It is. So one of the book clubs that I belong to, we meet every other month.
Mm-hmm.
And
in a library?
In a library.
That's cool.
And the head librarian of this library holds aside any new cookbooks that have come in the past month or so.
Wow.
And holds them aside for us, the cookbook club,
mm-hmm.
to review them, discuss them, and then have the first shot at checking them out.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And we, there
we might steal it. That's why we're on the podcast talking about it. We might steal that.
So we always have a theme as well. So this last month when we met, our theme was crackers and dip.
Mm-hmm.
So we made homemade crackers, which I had never really, I love being in the kitchen. I cook a lot, and it had never occurred to me that I could make my own crackers.
Yeah.
And I've made them three times since. So mm-hmm. I'm a little hooked now. I don't think I'll ever be buying store-bought crackers again.
Kudos to the library for doing that,
though. Yes, yeah.
Like, hey, folks, bring some food in.
Right. And then the other cookbook club that I just joined picks one cookbook,
mm-hmm.
and everybody, they bring extra copies of the cookbook in so you can check them out, and everybody is supposed to pick a dish out of that cookbook, and then they have a potluck.
That sounds great.
Yes, and so also meeting at the library, having a giant potluck, all cooking out of one particular cookbook.
What was the last one?
The cookbook is Samir Nassat, the acid heat,
salt,
fat,
mm-hmm.
whatever order that mm-hmm. goes in, right? Which is actually a book that I already own, because it's one of those that's, I always say, like, reading that book is like going to culinary school.
Wow.
It's really, she doesn't even start with the recipes until page 214.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because she feels like you should gain this knowledge before you start to cook.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and she talks about, you know, the science and the, you know, all that kind of geeky stuff. And I really like that, you know, I'm from Berkeley, California, and she got her start in Berkeley, California, Chez Panisse.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so that's been super fun. And now, today,
Checked this book out before coming into the podcast.
I just checked it out.
What is that
out.
There?
Midwest Made.
Yeah.
Big, bold baking from the heartland.
That's great.
So I have heard really good things about this book and have seen some very cool stuff that people have made
mm-hmm.
from an online community I'm in. So people have been posting pictures of it and talking about how great it is. And so I was super excited when it was on the shelf today.
Just a shout out to cookbook collections in our library. If folks, it's sort of a cliched meme out there that people are tired of reading blogger recipes where they have to go through the big short story to get to the recipe. We've got so many cookbooks, and they've got 80 to 90 recipes you could just check out right now.
Well, and I love all the pictures.
Yeah.
And I do love the tactileness of having a book.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
no one wants to read a recipe off their smartphone, so
no.
I mean,
no. No, it's a pain.
Yeah.
It's a total pain, because I do that as well. But oftentimes, if I find something online that I really want to make, I print the page out.
Right on.
Yeah. I have collections of splattered Xeroxed copy recipes from Cooks Illustrated that are like, well, maybe I should have put that in plastic.
Right.
Yeah. Quick plug for the biannual bake sale we have here at the library that Kelly runs.
So. I know. I buy jam every single year.
Oh,
it's the best jam. I always, my jam all comes from the bake sale.
Come and get your chocolate stout cupcakes.
That's right. And you bake some. Yeah, you
chocolate
bake those
stout
Guinness
cupcakes.
Cupcakes.
I usually use the Poet Stout, which is.
Oh, okay.
I think it's New Holland.
New Holland's Poet Stout.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
The one I've
Zone.
Kind of settled on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, Lauren, you got to use chocolate.
Chocolate is.
You win the bake sale.
You win the bake sale too, and the kickoff.
I know. My daughter kept saying you were just trying to be too fancy, and I was trying to be a little fancy.
Nothing wrong with that.
I like being a little fancy sometimes.
Lorinda, it's been a pleasure.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
Great. I feel, you know, Ferndale famous.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being on the podcast. Folks, yes, you can come into the library and sometimes find scones and crepes and you never know what. And
that's right.
A lot of it is thanks to the Friends of the Ferndale Library. Thank you, Lorinda.
Thank you.
And send our thanks back to the board at the next meeting.
Yes.
All right.
This was fun.
And that was our chat with the treasurer of the Friends of the Ferndale Library. That was Lorinda Ross. We had a great time chatting with her. Came all the way over here from California, has been here in Michigan for 10 years, and had some great thoughts to share about why it's so important to be supporting your library, and why maybe even you could consider joining the Friends of the Ferndale Library. That's at ferndalefriends.org. You can join or donate when you get to that website. It also is basically going to be supporting this podcast once you get there. If you want to support this podcast, also, you could leave us a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts. It could help us find some more library-loving listeners. I've been Jeff Milo, Kelly Bennett, the producer. Lorinda Ross is our guest today from The Friends. And the music you're hearing is by John Duffy. This is the Library Podcast, the Ferndale Library Podcast, A Little Too Quiet. We've got more to come still in Season 1. Thanks for listening.